Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to the Pinkney to Pinkney Show. I am the Reverend Edward Pinkney. I tell you, I had quite a week. Nobody would believe what happened. Nobody would understand it. You have to be spiritual. But before I talk about that, let me say this. I do not talk to Sambos. Don't call me. If you see me at the store, don't say hi to me. Do not talk to me, period. I do not talk to Sambos. Never will. Anybody who's willing to destroy our community and believe it is okay, I will not speak to him. You don't have to never call me. If my house is on fire, don't call and tell me my house is on fire. Don't do it. I will never, ever answer a call from a sambo. Never. It's unfortunate, but that's just the way it is. We are in a crisis. We just don't get it. You know, for over 450 years, we have been this way. You know, I will stand up as a man. I'm not bent at the knees. You'll never see me bent at the knees. You'll never see me kissing their butts. I will stand up like a man. All the black men swinging on a tree that was swung on a tree. For all the women who were raped, robbed. For all the men who was raped. I will stand up for you and fight with my life for you. I will. For our children, I will stand up like a man. For our babies, I will stand up like a man supposed to stand up. You can count on me. Because I believe that there's so much we can do if we do it. You know, there's nothing more important than the future of our children. Nothing. That's the foundation. That's the foundation. And that's what we have to do. What will America look like without racism? What would a new world look like without racism? And all the people valued each other, black, white, it don't make a difference. You see, actually, we all just one race. Nobody want to talk about that. We are actually just one race. You know, white people have black blood in them. Black people have white blood in them. But yet we talk about someone wanting to be better than someone else. Think about this. This is the work of government. This is how government said that they're against racism. They're not. They love to see the country divided and fighting with each other. That way they don't have to do any fighting. That's the truth. They don't have to do any fighting if you're fighting each other. It don't take a Rhodes Scholar to figure that out. So what they do when they attack, they come up with all these different viruses, which would normally bring people together. But it separates so many people. When I use that term separation, I mean exactly that. It separates the people. It don't allow the people. It don't allow the people to do what they need to do. You know, and think about this. Critical race theory is just another tool in their toolbox. That's all it is. You know, they don't want their children to know how terrible black folks were treated. They don't want their children to know that. They don't want their children to know how terrible black folks were treated. We got black folks today that's working with them to do pretty much the same thing. You know, critical race theory is just history. True history. True history. You see? So they don't want you to know the truth about history. See, black folks wasn't the only ones. What about the Native Americans? Over 10 million of them were slaughtered. Over 10 million of them were slaughtered. Over 10 million of them were slaughtered. And that is the truth and nothing but the truth. And they don't want to talk about that. That's the last thing on their mind. They don't want to talk about the Native Americans. They don't want to talk about black folks. Only thing they want to talk about is white folks. Well, white folks is black folks. You see, they don't know that. And black folks is white folks. You see, that's the issue right there. They don't want you to know that. They don't want their children to know. That's where that critical race theory comes in. When you think about it, actually think about critical race theory. What is it? What is it? It's just basically history. That's all it is. You know, I don't see how one person can be racist against somebody else. I don't see that, you know. I never cared about whether a person was black or white. That was just me. I never cared. I was too busy trying to find myself, you see. But that's what's happening today. That's where we're at today, that critical race theory. You know, it's just another tool in their toolbox to separate everybody. See, the key thing is separation. If you separate everybody, they will fight against each other, just like Republicans and Democrats. According to them, it's almost split down the middle, black and white. Now we got Mexicans, we got the Panamanians, we got all these other people. What they got to do now is pit them against each other and keep them fighting. Because as long as they're fighting, they don't have to do no fighting. They do not have to do any fighting. And that's the whole program. Everything they want to be is about them. They don't care about you. Everybody is expendable. Everybody. I don't care who you think you are. You're expendable. That's right. You are expendable, you know, so don't think that you're better than the next person. I don't care how much money you got, you see, you're not better than the next person. You got white blood in you if you're black, and if you're white, you got black blood in you, you see. And don't let these people tell you different. That's how they line folks up. And biracial, we all about biracial, whether we like it or not. That's because I know my great-great-great-grandfather was white. He was. My grandmother, she was really my father's mother. She was like that. She could pass for white. You know, my father, he was pretty light than me. And then my children, you know. But, they, you know, biracial, what difference do it really make? You're still a human being. As long as you act like a human being with two legs, two arms, that's all it takes. and a brain. You got to have a brain because it's important that you have a brain. People can understand what you're trying to say because I think that's crucial. We live in a country where it's unbelievable when you sit down and think about it. We have these people controlling us. I'm talking about controlling millions and millions and millions of people. And nobody's saying a word. You know, they tell you what to do. If they decide to cut off Medicaid, they cut it off. They vote it out if they want to. That's the things that they do that we have to stop. We have to stop all this madness, you know. We have to make sure that we're doing what we're supposed to do, which is so, so important. And this is why I am so hard on Sambos, you see. I'm hard on them because they don't really get it. I mean, how could you be that naive to want to go out there and destroy the people that live inside the community and think it's all right? That's why I would never, ever talk to a Sambo. If you're a Sambo, I got you listed down in a Sambo, don't try to contact me. If you contact me, and I'm not violent, but that's an act of war. Don't contact me. Don't call me. Don't. If you see me walking down the street, don't even wave. That's how I feel. Don't wave at me. Don't talk to me. Don't do nothing. Because the picture, the big picture, is our children. You know, I always think about what happened during slavery, how all this came about, you know, and people don't like to bring up stuff like that, but I do, because I want people to understand why I'm fighting, why I'm striving. You see, I know that the mission that I was on was designed by God. Only God could have helped me or direct me to be successful at this. I couldn't do it by myself. I don't have the skills. I don't have the knowledge, but I got the heart for the people. And to me, there's nothing more important than having a heart for the people. When you got a heart for the people, you can do so much. There's so much that you can do that makes things a little bit easier for everybody. And when I say easier for everybody, I mean exactly that, easier for everybody. What I do is just not about me. It's not. We have got 19 people out of prison that have served over 1,200 years. 19. This year I'm counting on one more. I don't know, after I get that one, I'm going to retire from that. But it takes money to do that. When I said 19, that's where we at today. And it takes a lot of energy. It's not something that's done overnight. It's a process that you have to go through, that you have to spend, make sure that everything is lined up, because you're dealing with the parole board and you're dealing with the governor. And either one of them can say no. And most of the time they try to say no, but you got to keep fighting. The key is getting a psych to talk to them. You see, a good one. I don't mean one of the most jackheads. You got, you know, it's going to cost you, for him to talk to him an hour, going to cost $5,000. That's how much it costs, $5,000. And they got to put in a report. And once they put in a report, we're halfway there. That is so, so important because that puts us in a position to do what we need to do. We have gotten 37 juvenile lifers out. So we was the one who actually put that into motion. Well, actually, it was my team who went to the ACLU. And ACLU and I, we worked together to make it happen. So that, to me, was very, very important. That's how many. It's 37 at this stage. One of the guys we got out never came back to say thank you. And but we expect that. You know, respect, because that's the mentality that you're dealing with. So that's important. So we just have to do what we need to do. I'm going to bring in my first guest, but before I bring him in, I want to talk about, I put something on the table on yesterday about an incident that happened at the courthouse where Violetta speaks, one of the samples, brought in witnesses that was lying on the oath, and they was lying. And we're going to be discussing it with my lawyers, and we want to decide what we want to do. I put it on the table and let the people decide. Either we should go after them or let God deal with it. Those are the two choices. And so far, the voting is like this. To go after them is 877 people. 877 people say, go get them. Go get them. They have to be taught a lesson. And I'm good at teaching lessons. They said 877 said, go after them. Go after them. But 921 said, let God handle it. So the voting is not over until Thursday. You can email me at banco9342@sbcglobal.also. I didn't tell you any additional votes for the Sambo of the Year Award. It's the same as it was yesterday, and I'll give the total on Sunday. Sundays are the days I get the total. Right now, my letter seats is leading with 7,529 votes, followed by Trenton Bourne. Trenton Bourne has 5,280. Call me back. Ron Singleton has 5,222. Dwayne Seats got 4,529. Oh, sorry, Marcus Muhammad got 5,009 votes. Judge Mayfield got 4,321. Ellis Mitchell, Sleepy, they call him, 4,510. And Chief McGinnis got 4,309. Let me do it in order so you know. Violetta Seats got 7,229, the same total she had yesterday. Trenton Bourne got 5,280, same numbers he had yesterday, because we have not calculated all the votes from yesterday and today. We haven't had the time to do it. And I do apologize for that, but we have not had the time to go into that. And then we have Marcus Muhammad with 5,009 votes, and Ron Singleton, 5,222, and Judge Mayfield, 4,321, and Chief McGinnis, 4,309. And on that note, I'm going to bring in the one and only Phil Basket, and he's going to tell the story, and I will tell you, get your votes in. Not only who should deal with this man? Let God deal with him, or should we get him and get your vote for him? Thank you. Phil, Reverend Pinckney, talk to me.
Reverend, how's it going?
Hey, you know me. I'm just rocking and rolling and rolling and rocking, trying to make it happen. That's all I can do, big fella.
I hear you. Well, I wanted to tell you about something that I've been kind of following on YouTube.
Okay.
It's something that has to do with the coronavirus and all the control kind of stuff that's been going on with that. And I'm hoping Dr. Tynes is listening, because this is from a guy named Dr. David Martin, and he makes he talks about some serious stuff. And what he says is, Sorry, Reverend, I'm kind of messing with my phone here.
Take your time.
Okay. There's a 21-minute thing that I want to send you where he was doing a speech for the European Parliament. And he said things like that the coronavirus was actually manufactured by the United States. And University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, I guess, had a patent on it years ago. He said coronavirus was first isolated in 1965 and that they had some kind of vaccine or something in 66. But what they determined by 1990 was that a vaccine was never effective against the coronavirus because it was too what they call malleable. It could change too quickly. And, you know, being the common cold, we've always said conventional wisdom was you can't cure the common cold. So, and I think that really the coronavirus was, to me, kind of a cold on steroids. And the thing is, they have a term in the medical field, I guess, when they're doing this research on viruses, call it gain of function. Now, we think of that as a good thing. But gain of function, what that really means is to make the virus more deadly to human beings. So really what they're talking about is making it into a weapon. So I'm going to send you that link, Reverend. I had a hard time finding it, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
The European Summit, the one that he spoke at, it's actually a four-hour-long thing. That's been taken down on YouTube. They said it didn't conform to their guidelines. So that's kind of humorous. But I think if you look hard enough, you can find it. But I will send you the thing from Dr. David Martin. I wanted to tell you another thing. There's actually two more things I'd like to talk about. One is I saw another video of Dr. David Martin, and he was talking about, oh, you know, the powers that be or whoever controls kind of the whole world, which it seems to be about 150 families really control almost all the finance. You know, in the United States, 90% of the media is owned by six different companies, you know, NBC and Disney and, you know, there's whatever, the four others. So this guy, David Martin, he's giving a description of, he's calling them the beasts, you know, like we do. And he said, he pointed out a movie, it's called 300 or something like that. I don't know if you've seen it, where, you know, there's Spartans in it and soldiers, you know, from that time period. And the mm-hmm. scene he shows, a big rhinoceros thing, monster coming at the soldiers. And the one Spartan levels his spear at it. And they're just showing this thing coming at him. And you think it's going to put his horn right through the guy. And it ends up just sliding right to his feet. And the analogy, this Dr. David Martin said, is that this group, in a sense, is dead. Because they're going to try bringing out more coronavirus restrictions probably this year is the guess, and that people are not even going to pay them any attention. And I'd like to think this. It gives me hope to think that what he said basically is the beast is already dead. It's still flailing around. It could still cause damage. But, man, there's just a hope for me, Reverend, like your dream of no racism and you know, a lot of good things happening. If they just stop lying to us, and that wouldn't cost a thing, there would be such a change in this world, it would be unbelievable. And there's one more thing I want to talk about that, to me, relates to this. This guy named Paul Craig Roberts, who's been writing since the 80s, I think, and I even put a couple of his articles in the Kalamazoo Voice back in, you know, 2005 or so. So I respect the man, and I think he's a straight shooter, just like Dr. David E. Martin is, I believe, too. But Paul Craig Roberts said that when I say the BRICS group of nations, you know what I'm talking about? Like basically Russia, right? India, China, I think Brazil. Well, what he says is that six countries have just agreed to join that. And, you know, some people might make them very afraid. It doesn't to me. And what Robert says is that if they're doing this, it's obvious they're not afraid of the United States, which is the leading military mm-hmm. power. And they're not afraid of this, the whole the globalist agenda, I think, which tells me maybe the beast is dead. You know, maybe they've overplayed their hand. I don't know.
Let me say this. I think a good example of power is that if you supply people with the right arms, Ukraine has no business going chest to chest with Russia. They have
right.
no business. You know,
yes.
it doesn't make any sense. Russia was the second most powerful country, not China. Russia was. But Russia and China together could probably whoop the United States and the United Kingdom and all the rest of them, you know. But unfortunately, they kind of knew this. They kind of expected this. And what they're doing, they're supplying them with billions and billions and billions of dollars of arms to fight this battle. And what I see, and this is me talking, I think this is designed to break our concentration. I think something entirely different is going on. See, when you talk about that David Martin, is that correct?
To David Martin, yeah.
Right. I was reading on some of the stuff that he was saying, and I agree with him. I agree that what what's going on in this country is really criminal. What they're doing to us is criminal, but we won't say it because we're afraid of the government.
Yes.
We are afraid of the government, and they keep us afraid. They want us to fight with each other. See, if everybody want to know the truth, I got white blood in me, Phil. You got black blood in you. And there's no other way of putting it. What if they told everybody that to people?
Right.
I don't care if you can live in Finland, New Zealand. You still got black blood in you.
Yeah.
Saying about the beginning. So why don't we just tell people the truth, Phil? Just tell them the truth. This is happening. This is going on. Let's start telling people the truth. And I'm going to get into David. I want to get into David and find a way to talk more and see where we at on that and make things happen. Because I tell you, we're fighting for our lives. Whether we know it or not, don't you know that these people, them old dogs up there that's controlling everything, they don't give a rat's butt about us. They don't care about you, Phil. They don't care
they
nothing
don't
about
care.
Me.
No.
Mm-mm. So,
they don't seem to care about humans at all.
No. And you're 100% correct. So, give me your take on COVID and how you feel, and now is on his way back. Tell me what you think.
I think that it's all like a kind of a ghost. I know that people got sick and died. A lot of people died. Most of those had what they call co-conditions or something like that. I can't remember the exact term. A co-diagnosis or whatever, something else that makes us vulnerable. So I would say these are biological weapons. I think they're designed to they target the weak, you know, just like kind of like AIDS did with gay people. They didn't die from AIDS. They died from the skin cancers and weird things that would never kill people normally. So the AIDS itself, it hurt their immune system. And I think that's kind of the strategy to go with. If you want to do something for yourself, do whatever you can to improve your immune system, because a lot of us are compromised by the food that we eat. And, you know, you can't help all the chemicals around you and the air that you breathe, but you can, you know, try to get out every day if you can, and move around, because that's what gets your lymph nodes working in your body. And, you know, it's no secret that on the medical front, the medical industry lied to us the whole time. Now they're saying that some people are calling the vaccine a bioweapon, okay? So it gets pretty deep here, you know, and I think the thing is, you really have to do more than just think about things or even just feel things. Sometimes I think it might help to, you know, some people call it prayer, but you might call it meditation. In some way, go inside yourself, you know, be calm and say to yourself, okay, what is the right action for me right now? I don't care what the TV is telling me. I don't even care what my neighbor is telling me. Just what feels right to me right now. And we just sort of have to, but you kind of zigzag through the minefield out here.
Mm-hmm.
But my, you know, more and more people, especially, you know, 3 years of COVID, that was a good primer for a lot of people to realize, okay, the government, you know, even if it was a, the way they said, they didn't have to destroy the economy the way that they did. You know, here's an interesting thing, Reverend. I don't know if we've ever talked about the Amish people, but the Amish people refused vaccination. They, you know, they're very spiritual people for the most part. And when they didn't listen to any of the recommendations, they all went to church. They all got COVID. They got over it and had natural immunity. And there very little incidence of dying and serious things, maybe because they didn't go to the hospital and get on a ventilator. I don't know if that's a coincidence, or if maybe they didn't give them.
Are you saying that the Amish people got COVID and they didn't go to the hospital? They got themselves well.
Yep, they just got over it. And
you know, my daughter caught COVID, but here's what. I was trying to explain to her how to deal with it. And after she got over it, what she did, they went out and got the shot. And I explained to her, she should, you know, you didn't have to take the shot. And then when she got the shot, she got COVID again.
Oh, my God. Yes. Isn't that crazy? And they were telling people it's going to – and what they say, oh, no, we never told you – you weren't going to get it. You just weren't going to get it as seriously. So how bad did she get it?
She was sick. She was real sick.
After she got
she thought she was going to die.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, I mean, I could talk about that for a long time, Reverend. It's a controversial topic. But I think that the vaccine actually weakens your immune system, and that the boosters. I don't know. Have you heard about the people that they call it myocarditis, where you know it's your heart muscle, right? Your cardiac, whatever. You know, young people having heart attacks, athletes, you know, dropping dead right on the playing field, just sort of unexplainable.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, you know, they honestly, I would tell everyone who's listening, please don't get another vaccine. It's not helping you. You know, the CDC is starting to admit a lot of these things. If you want to, you know, peruse their site, look online. They're now admitting that, you know, people that had the vaccine, they seem to get this long COVID thing. And I don't think that's a natural thing. I think it's, you know, they just can't seem to get rid of it almost. You know, it's like a endless thing. So, yeah, I firmly believe, Reverend, for one thing, watching carefully what you eat. I don't eat enriched bread anymore because I believe that we're all getting way too much iron in our diet, and they measure our blood, and it's not in our blood, it's in our tissues, in our liver, and I think that's a major problem. But that's one thing, you know. So if you want to combat COVID, try to eat good food. And part, you know, some people are saying maybe try to eat a little less. And I know that's what you do. And give your stomach, you know, people talk about intermittent fasting. I think this is a good thing. Like, you know, stop eating by, like, say, 7 in the evening. And then, you know, don't eat again until you eat. But, and give your gut a chance.
You know what? My time is between 5:30 and 6. I ate earlier today because of my show. And I'm going to eat again about 5:30 or 6. Just, you know, to balance things out. I probably lost, I would say, maybe about 15 pounds, you know. And I feel good. And I'm pacing myself. And I think one of the things that people don't quite understand, which is really, really important, is that, like you said, be careful what you eat. And you know, I got a thing now about eating out now. If I can help it, I'd rather not eat out, you see. Because I know, I went to a Domino's pizza place, during the process of buying the pizza, you know, I paid the girl, you know, up front first, right? And when I paid her, she went straight back there and started making my pizza without washing her hands.
I
had a problem with her. I said, you're never supposed to take money and then go make food. She got an attitude, and I said, but that's reality. I said, you know what I told her? I said, keep my money. You know, you can keep it. I'm not going to eat that pizza, you know, because I see, and I don't know how many people that this has happened to, and to me, okay, let's say I forgot to wash my hands. And sometimes we forget to wash our hands. Well, why don't we just go wash our hands and then start messing with food? But no, she didn't want to do that. I contacted the home office in Ann Arbor. Matter of fact, I had Libby to go there and contact them, made contact with them, and explained to them what was happening. And you know what? They never contacted me back.
Oh, wow.
Like it was a normal thing. That's why I really don't like going out and eat, because concern about people not washing their hands, because you pick your nose, you rub your hair, you do everything.
Yeah.
You know, because I know I do it.
Yeah.
So if I do it, you know somebody else. Don't be fixing people food and think it's all right. So my thing now is that Domino's believe that it's all right.
Yeah,
and that's why I really don't try to eat out. I hate eating out, as a matter of fact. You know, and I know it's more convenient to go pick up your food, but I just don't like it. I would say a high-scale restaurant like Red Lobster. I think Bimbo's is good. I think, you know, I trust them. But I don't trust these other places, McDonald's. Oh, that's another place I don't like, you know. I don't think these people should be fixing food. I think you should look a certain way to be able to fix food. Make sure the person has clean clothes on. Make sure their hands are clean. Make sure their hair is covered up. You know, that's how you deal with it. But they don't care no more. They don't care. All they care about you paying that money.
Yeah.
And that's just the way it is. It's unfortunate, Phil. It's unfortunate, but that's just the way it is.
Yeah. Well, and I think there's another problem we're facing right now is that places can't – it's real hard for them to find people that want to work regularly, you know, be committed. And that's the feeling I get, is that places
–
you know, in my wife's work, I know the Kalamazoo Public Schools, they have a horrible time finding, you know, bus drivers, people to help in the food service. And I think restaurants and every place, they're kind of overworking the people that they do have. And they're just not finding enough people. And so it's kind of like the employees, they can write their own ticket almost. You know, it's rare they're going to get fired because there's no
place. That's why they're bringing in the immigrants.
Mm, Yes.
The immigrants, let me say this. I remember, I may have told you this, that some Mexicans put a roof on my house.
Yeah.
It took them a half a day to put a roof on my house.
My gosh.
And look, they would not even take a break.
I like
they
that.
They did not take a break. So here's what I'm thinking. I'm thinking these immigrants that they're bringing in is going to be doing their McDonald's jobs. They're going to be doing all the labor that people complain that they don't want to do, or they're not doing. That's what I see. I see that is exactly what's going on now. They're going to bring these people in. These people are going to do the work that nobody else wants to do. I remember, what the Mexicans is doing, what they're doing here in Benton Harbor. We got more Mexicans now in Benton Harbor than ever before. I would say maybe 4 to 5% of the population here is Mexicans.
I'll
we
be
got
darned.
At least,
that is different.
But we also got about 5 to 6%, no, maybe more than that, maybe 10% white folks here in Benton Harbor.
Oh, is that a change too?
A major change. So
okay,
in other words, Benton Harbor used to be like 98% black. Now it's about 86%.
Oh my gosh! And the city's not getting any nicer, right?
No, but the plan is, you see, you got to drive the old folks, the old people, out of the community. Then you can start gentrification. On the other side, see, what they're doing now is downtown, you see.
Okay.
Gentrifying it right now. They got Harbor Towers down there. They're trying to figure out how they can take that building and get rid of all the people, residents that live in there. So what we're going to do, we're going to bump a pipe. We're going to let people do whatever they want to do. And then we're going to clean it up. That's the formula they use for this.
Yeah, they're slick, aren't they?
Yeah, very clever. You know, but we're so busy trying to survive. We don't see what's underneath the cover.
Yeah.
You see? And then what we got to do, we got to pit you against me and me against you. That's how you – now Mexicans going to be against those people coming from South America. You see?
Yeah.
They already put the Mexicans against the Puerto Ricans. You see, there are more Mexicans than Puerto Ricans.
Okay.
Okay? So now we got the people coming from South America, and it might be more of them coming than there is Mexicans.
Wow.
So now
that's,
you got a whole different ballgame here.
Right, because they're coming through the south border of Mexico, is my understanding. And
they're coming from everywhere. They, you can tell. And whoever heard, because they came here, you're going to bust them somewhere and give them a place to live, and we have all these homeless people here.
Man.
That don't make no sense.
Right.
You didn't try to find a hotel for the homeless people?
Yeah.
All the people that are sleeping on the street. Look in Chicago. Look in New York. All these homeless people everywhere. You didn't try to find them no hotel. You didn't try to find them no place to live. So something else is going on here.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, the whole system is, to me, is breaking down. They can't make it work. Young people can't afford a house. That's why they don't want to go to work. They got no chance of getting anything out of it. And they can't, the rents are so high they can't even pay the rent. You know, you got to work 40 hours to pay your rent. And, you know, I don't know about there, but rents here in Kalamazoo, you know, some of these apartments, a one-bedroom apartment, they're asking like $1,200 a month. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
Who's renting these,
absolutely. Even the broken-down apartments and stuff, they're asking for big money.
Here's
another thing. The one who own a house, what they doing here, they trying to tax them out. Raising the tax. Every time you look up, a millage here, a millage there. Millage out everywhere. You don't see nothing but millage.
Jeez. Yeah, they must be, it must be more aggressive in Benton Harbor than here in Kalamazoo.
Oh,
but people, there's rumors
more
that
here.
They're trying to gentrify the neighborhood in Kalamazoo, is my understanding, anyway. That's what they say.
Yeah.
That, well, they're moving towards the north side, you know.
I don't doubt that at all. Your street is a pretty decent street, and them hills they was pretty nice. Years ago, I know when I lived there, they was nice.
Well, there's a lot of really nice old houses here, but I don't think they care about. You know, there was a couple suspicious fires over on North Street. Great big houses, beautiful old houses, but maybe they were, you know, decrepit and ready to be condemned. I don't know, but there, you know, fires just happen. We seem to destroy the old so easily. You know, bring in some new construction. I'm sorry to see the old houses. They're so well built. You know, I don't know why we couldn't just keep more.
Yeah, see, that's just like when I went to St. Louis. They got all these old, they're 100% brick. Anytime that you have a brick house, you can renovate it. And I would like to go. I would like to go there and buy some of them old houses, and put people up in there, homeless people. You know, if I can buy it with cash. Or something like that, then I would let people live there. You know, I would let them make it a drug house or nothing like that. But I would let them live. These brick houses, they're big and nice. I love them.
Oh yeah.
But that's just the way it
is.
Hey Phil, I got two more minutes with you, big fellas. Then I'm gonna bring Doris in. So Doris will say a few words. And
sure.
Tell me what you want
sure.
people to know. Tell me what you want people to know.
You know, there's a war on for your mind, I believe. And we all have to become better at perceiving our truth. And maybe turn off the TV for a little while. I would suggest not watching the news, but that's a little radical, I know. But I think it's designed to make you scared and make you sad and parade things in front of your eyes that you can't do anything about. And they're going to, make you feel uninspired and sad. Cliche, but go within. Find the happiness in yourself and the sense of knowing. And, you know, you've got to stop listening to the bullcrap because it's coming from all sides. And really the truth is that we're all amazing creatures with a lot of potential. And if there wasn't all this lying going on, what a beautiful place we could live in. And I guess I'll finish with just a quote from the last thing I wrote about you, Reverend. It's not an exact quote, but I said, you know, in a better world, the Reverend's boundless energy would take us to new heights. But for now, we have to just be satisfied with his shining beacon pointing out the shit.
I like
Sorry,
it.
That's a little
good. Believe me, I understand. What day is you planning on coming here? You coming next week or?
I can. You know, I'm pretty open, but I'll come when it's convenient for you. I did get the books on Friday, so I will.
Oh, bless your heart. Okay, so let's plan. Let's plan for next Tuesday or Wednesday.
Okay, probably Wednesday. I'm thinking.
Okay.
I'm already leaning towards Wednesday, okay?
Okay, and I'm leaning towards Wednesday, too. And you also might want to bring a bimbos with you.
Oh, okay. I can take a hint.
Yeah, and I'm giving a hint, too, if you don't mind.
I hear you loud and clear.
Yeah, yep. And I'm you know, you can take it. I'm giving a hint, so bring it on in. So yeah,
okay,
all right, my brother. I'm gonna bring in my good friend Doris. Let her say a few words because I haven't spoke to her in a little while, and she haven't had a chance to say anything on the radio. And then I'm gonna bring Annette in to clean it up for us. On that day, Phil, you hang in there. Love you, man. Take care of yourself and stay safe and be careful. All right, my brother. Let me start with Doris. Doris, talk to me. Tell me what's really going on.
Hey, Reverend Pastor Pickney, how you doing? And welcome back. It's good to hear your voice.
Oh, it's good to be back. Good to be back. I was down in St. Louis, and I've been to Grand Rapids on these days and all these different conferences because I want to know what other people are thinking. I want to know, what's really going on. That's what I want to know. I want to know what can we do to make things better, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So
real
that,
leader.
That's really...
You, leadership. Mm-hmm. Yes,
yeah.
Indeed. Well, it's been, you know, just working at it still. Time is obviously been on our side with this Davis Brothers situation. There are more people stepping forward, making their claims, and so it shouldn't be too much longer, but the wealth transfer shall go on. So I'm just happy to say that, you know, with the Davis Brothers Lumber Company.
Absolutely, absolutely. And we got to get our people moving. You know, people got to understand what we're doing and how we're doing it and make sure we are focused on people who want to enhance the future of our children, you know.
Yes.
You know, my fight is, you know, this is what I fight for. I fight for our children. I don't fight for Reverend Pinckney. I don't fight I fight for the future of our children. That's my
mm-hmm.
fight there. That gives me
yes.
the energy to continue this. And then, we got to get our children on a level that they can understand.
Yes. They are the future, and I can
yep.
remember my parents taught me to help pay for the farm, you know, up in mm-hmm. Washington State, the 40-acre farm. But I can remember my dad leaving what he had. He said, I want to show my dad. He doesn't have to hand me everything on a silver platter. I can do this on my own. And he had mm-hmm. 15 children. And he always taught me amateurization. He was like, here, write this out, do this math. And so it helped me as to when I utilized those skills as a grown woman in real estate, it was automatic. It kicked in because I had done that before, you know, as
mm-hmm.
a child. And so that helped me a lot to be taught to do that type of math. And I became number one in the state of Washington for the financial exams, yeah, in the year 2000. And so... I mean, I outdid the bankers, underwriters.
Mm. Oh, okay.
And so you can do it, but it was only because my parents took that time to teach me and tell me
yeah.
about the running of the land, about how to read maps, you know, start young. It's okay. It leaves an impression upon the mind.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. I truly understand where you're going with this and what you're saying because it's important. So you actually from Washington State, huh?
No, I'm from Louisiana. I'm from Jonesboro. Yeah.
Jonesboro.
Born.
Where's Jonesboro?
It's right there at Chatham and St. Rest and Ansley and Hodge and... Then you get Ruston and Grambling, yeah. So
is
we're about in the
towards,
north
is
central.
Is that going towards Baton Rouge or what?
No, we're more in north central part of Louisiana. Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay.
And Baton Rouge is further south. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
But thank you so much for the time. I know Annette is on here, and God bless her in her travels. And God bless you, thank him for being so merciful in my life, and just blessings to everyone. Thank you, Reverend Pinkney.
All right. You take care of yourself. And we're going to take this thing to a whole different level. Stay focused, and it's a done deal. My good friend Annette, talk to me. Talk to me, Annette.
All right, we're blowing the whistle from the Big D. I want everybody to know that the money is, like Doris said, it's actually here. We just want people to go ahead and get in place. You tell us whatever company that you want to own. If we don't have it, we're going to get it. And so we thank you so much for everything that you have done. I also want to shout out Pastor Dunn, who we were also speaking as well. Again, he has many radio stations that we want to blast out what we're doing with the Davis Brothers, but also with the Melanated People. I really enjoyed Sister Inez, Miss Inez's show. We had a four-hour show, and it was so explosive and so dynamic with a lot of information. Just like your shows, we're asking everyone to please download the shows and put them on all of their social media sites because we have so much information. And again, Reverend Pinkney, before we go, we want everybody to know MacDonald Mondays, no fast foods on Mondays, Ticket Tuesday, Ticket Tobacco Taco Tuesday, no tobacco and no lottery tickets, no gambling on Tuesdays, Walmart Wednesdays, no Walmart, no convenience stores, no Quick Mart, no Jiffy Mart, no convenience stores, Thirsty Thursday, no alcohol, and no gasoline. And on Foreign Fridays, no foreigners on Friday. Everything is black-owned, black-only on Fridays. And, of course, keep the Sabbath holy. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Absolutely. And, Annette, next Monday I want you to come on, and I want you to – I'm going to give you about 15 minutes, and I want you to talk a little – you know, just we're going to go into the McDonald's, and I want to go deeper into that so people can understand how important it is. And then also, you know what, when we talk about that, that gives people something that they can do. And that, and
exactly.
To me, that's what I like more than anything else. That's something that you can do, and you ain't got to be all scared. Just don't go. You know?
Just don't go. This is something, hey, look, this is something you don't have to do, okay? And this is the day that you don't do it. We're not telling you not to do it at all. We're just saying if everybody stick together on that particular day, and it's very important that you understand the reasoning for that. No matter what city you're in, can you imagine when those Arabs get ready to go to their stores and they see that the black people didn't come in and they didn't buy no tobacco on Tuesday? And they see on Thursday they didn't buy no gasoline and they didn't buy no alcohol? Come on now. What's really going on? We are talking
with our
money.
We made them all millionaires.
Oh, without a doubt.
And don't nobody look. You'll never see no Arab going to a black store.
Never.
You'll never see
You won't see no Asians. That's the point we're making on Foreign Friday. If no foreigner don't come in your store, don't you go in their store, period.
Right.
And if we don't go into a foreigner store, and we queens don't go get no hair nails or your hair done or your nails done, and you don't go up into none of these Vietnamese or none of these Asian stores on a Friday? On a Friday? Are you kidding me? Do you know that those people probably will pack their things and they will leave because they know that we are being organized? And if you're asking us to come do business with you, we're going to demand that you come and do business with us. But we don't need
we're not doing no more business with you, period. And, you know, I picked the nail shop down here, you know, and with some of them black women, I was going nuts, boy. I got to get my nails done. I got to, and get my – oh, it was crazy. But, look, I don't have no more time. Okay. So what I want to do is that I got you next Monday. I'm going to put you down. So you make sure you come. My good friend Phil, Doris, everybody, we had a good house today. Good house today. God bless you all.
Thank you